what we're really doing tonight is, you know, we've been talking about this thing of justice. I'm not trying to make this a series about how unjust our world is. We already know that. We're not going to fix the world. We're not going to fix our justice system necessarily. But what we're talking about is understanding not what you know, maybe government leaders today say is just, not what I think is just, not what feels just, but what does God say is just? In other words, how does God tell us that He wants His children to treat one another in the area of justice? Now, tonight we're actually going to get right into something that probably the one part of this whole thing that we come into contact with most. In other words, it's probably the thing that is most practical in all of these lessons, because I think this kind of hits where we live much more than some of the other topics. So we've established that justice is the proper assessment of the truth. That's something we talked about the very first night. Here's the problem: it's hard to know the truth, right? Look, when people are involved, when this person says one thing and this person says something else, and we're faced with, have you ever had that? You know, I think about some examples. So you're the mom, and you're in the kitchen, and you hear this crash, or you hear this scream, or you hear something. You come into the other room, and there's your two kids with their fingers pointed at each other, right? And it's either he did it, no, she did it, or he hit me first, no, she hit me first, or, you know, whatever it is. And let's face it. Children have no qualms about blaming each other. They have no qualms about lying right in front of each other, right?
Right.
That's what you did with your brother, right? You were twins, you know. And of course, your poor mom. Not only were Tom and his brother, you know, excellent liars, but they're twins. So she didn't even know. Even if she could figure out who did it, she wouldn't know by the time the punishment came around if she was punishing the right one. But you know, that's a tough part, right? I mean, it's something really. You know what, mom? Now, again, I know. Most of you moms, you're like, oh, no, I know. You know, most young moms that I talk about, no, I know. I know that, not really. You're kind of at the mercy of the guilty one confessing much of the time. You know, and if that person doesn't do it, then you have a difficult time figuring out what truth is. And so that's kind of where we're talking about. It's hard to judge justly because the whole thing is about properly assessing the truth. So tonight we're going to get into, you know, a scenario. Basically, this is the scenario. You are living your life. Someone makes an accusation about someone else in your life. Now, when I say accusation, we're not necessarily talking about, they killed somebody or, you know, nothing necessarily major. We're just simply talking about, you know, hey, by the way, I hate to be the one to tell you this, Sherry, but Sue said something about you the other day, and I feel like you need to know. Now, and that's true, by the way. No, it's not. Now listen. Now here we are, and you've got to deal with that. You know, you're put in a position now where I have made an accusation. It's not an earth-shaking accusation, but I've made an accusation about somebody you care about. And it matters to you whether or not it's the truth, but how are you going to know if it's true or not? How are you supposed to, well, and again, but here's the point. So what we need to talk about here, because believe it or not, God has something to say with how you're supposed to proceed. God has much to say about how you are supposed to proceed. As soon as somebody comes to you with an accusation about somebody else. Remember the other night, I don't know if it was the first night of this or the second night, remember when I asked about what's the name? Brian Laundrie? Is that his name? The guy, the Gabby Petito thing? And I said, you know, how many of you believe he was guilty? Well, everybody believes he's guilty. But is that just? And we talked about that, you know, because there's an accusation, basically there's an accusation been made, right? And so we have to deal with things like that. And so here we go. So what are God's principles? You know, what are God's, you know, it can be anything from something as simple as, like I said, about the mom, you know, and she's trying to sort out her kids, to, you know, high-profile celebrity cases, you know, Bill Cosby's of the world, and things like that. How are we supposed to respond to that sort of thing? So let's get into some principles then regarding accusations. Number one, only eyewitnesses should be heard. God's principles about behaving justly when it comes to someone being accused of something. And I'm talking, you know, in this age of Facebook, this age of, you know, all the social media stuff. By the way, I really, really, really enjoyed Monday afternoon hearing all these people crying around, Facebook's down and Instagram's down. It's like, hey, why don't you get a book and read it? You know, go enjoy life for a couple of hours before that thing comes back up. You could actually have a good attitude for a while. So take advantage of it. And anyway, you know, in this age, you know, we live in a world where there's constantly somebody saying something about somebody, whether it's personally in our lives or something on a national scale. Here we go. Number one, only eyewitnesses should be heard. Let's look at the scripture. Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 15. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin or any sin that he sinneth. I know that sounds kind of, almost like sounds like Dr. Seuss. Yes. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. Now here's what we're talking about here. These the wording here. So when it says one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity, at the mouth of two witnesses, it's talking about it. The word witness here is a word that means one who records. It's somebody who's making a record. You know, it's almost like it's in other words, you have to be there. He's talking about it. It can't just be a bystander. It's got to be a witness, somebody who saw what happened, somebody who heard what happened. So let's go back here for a minute. So when I come to Sherry and I say, you know, Sherry, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but you know, last week your mom said something about you, and I feel like you need to know. Now, what's the first question she ought to ask me? Not what she say. That's what we do. Inquiring minds want to know. He's like, oh, what did she say? No, wait. Before we ever get to that, remember last week we talked about justice before judgment? What's the first question she should ask me? Why are you telling me that? That's a good question. Why are you telling me that? Why are you dumping your garbage on me? And by the way, that is not something I should be telling her. But that's not even the first question. There you go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you hear her say that?
Yeah.
Good one. Were you there? In other words, what kind of witness are you? There are multiple kinds of witnesses. We're talking about only eyewitnesses should even be heard. You see, how many times have you been there and say, well, you know, somebody told so-and-so told me this, and so-and-so, you know, it happens all the time. Do you know what there are some Bible words. Okay, let me make a couple statements here so I don't get you off your track here for those of you who like to fill this in. There is no such thing, no such thing as a second-hand witness. I'm going to say that again. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a second-hand witness because a witness to something means that person was there. So if that person wasn't there, they're not a witness. There's no such thing as a second-hand witness. Now, do people... So what happens when somebody repeats? So if Tom tells me something, and I come over here and I'm going to tell it to somebody else, there are some Bible words for that. None of them are good. None of them are good. So what are they? Well, I think I wrote down four of them here. First, there's tale-bearing. What is a tale-bearer? Okay, this is not rocket science, people. Thank you. Yes. How did you figure that out? Did you study that out in the Greek? It's somebody who tells a tale. Now, that doesn't mean they're lying. It doesn't even mean what they're not telling is true. But there is nothing good said in the Bible about a tale-bearer. But what it means is, Tom has told me a tale, could be true, could be false. If I take that to someone else, I become a tale bearer. I am sharing something that I did not personally witness. Okay? The Bible also uses the word, it's also called slandering. The Bible calls it slandering. The Bible also calls it gossip. And the Bible calls it whispering. Which Harold really likes right now, whispering. Harold got these new ear things, and getting used to the noise. I'm really happy about that, though, for him. I'm kind of jealous. But whispering. But not whispering as in being kind to somebody who is sensitive to hearing. It's like, why else do we whisper?
Somebody else doesn't hear.
Yeah. We only whisper when we don't want people to know what we're saying. Right? And why would you not want everybody to know what you're saying? Because you're a coward, that's why. I'm serious, you're a coward. Say it out loud. If you got something to say about somebody, say it out loud. If you can't say it out loud, you're a coward. And God thinks so too. This is not my words. Let's take a look at what God has to say about it. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 28. Again, now remember what we're talking about here. We're talking about anytime somebody wants to make an accusation or pass along an accusation that they were not an eyewitness to. The Bible calls that all of these words we just looked at. Notice in Proverbs 16, verse 28, a perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. Do you remember being in junior high school? How many of you remember that? It's funny, some of you don't remember that. I remember being in junior high school. It was a terrible time, right? I mean, there's nobody happy in junior high school. You think back, there were these popular kids. Look, they didn't know they were popular. And they thought they looked funny. And nobody likes who they are in junior high, I don't think. Are they in junior high? They're not in junior high. Yes? Oh, well, she has no reason to be concerned about it. So, yeah, junior high is a tough time. And boy, wasn't there a lot of whispering, isn't there? And does that not separate chief? You know, look, I can remember times like that, you know? And so this is what God is talking about. He said, look, this kind of thing, this is not a firsthand witness. This is not an eyewitness telling something, making an accusation. This is somebody who's whispering and making the rounds. So Solomon, you know, in fact, if you don't know if God is really serious about this, look at how Solomon prefaced this verse, talks about whispering. Here's what he said in verse 27. He said, an ungodly man digs up evil. Can we stop and take a time out here? Anytime somebody's running for office, do you ever notice how many people would love to just start digging? Start digging, and they'll go back as far as it takes. Dig as far as you have to find out something to use. An ungodly man digs up evil. And it is on his lips like a burning fire. It doesn't sound like a very good thing, you know. And of course, we could go to the New Testament. The Apostle Paul, again, talks all the time. Paul talks in almost all of his letters about gossiping, about backbiting, about talebearing, and all these kind of things. He covers that very, 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 very thoroughly. Now, but here's the question that I want to ask. So how often, though, is this rule violated by most of us? Let's stop and think about it a minute. Only an eyewitness. How often do we not? I'm not even talking about believing something. See, this, what God is teaching us here is that if Tom comes and tells me something he has seen personally, there is nobody that I should be going and telling that to. Anything I do with what he has told me that he saw is gossip. You follow me? But how many people can keep it to themselves? It is. Well, what is social media about if it's not sharing it? And again, I'm not down on all that. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, that's all it's used for. There's many, many good things it's used for. But I mean, that's really what it's kind of the whole function, right? To share. Here, what Christians call it, I'm sharing my concerns. I want to share a prayer request with you. Because I'm concerned about this person. Because here's what she did. You're not going to believe this. And she did this. And so we need to pray, right? We have a lot of ways we sort of cloak this, and it's not always easy, is it? Look, let me just say right from the beginning here, you know, in this, I honestly believe that most of God's people have perfectly good motives in this. I honestly believe most of the time God's people only want to help. I believe that. I believe most of the time, even when we are not following God's plan of justice, I think for the most part, people really do, they want to help. They are genuinely concerned. I mean, I've had some experiences that this week about that. You know, and we're genuinely concerned about something, and we want to help and all of that, but we've got to be very, very careful in how we do that. So, what's that, Beverly? Beverly, what are you whispering about? Hey. What are you whispering about? Oh, you don't want to tell me.
Yeah.
So we've got, so, you know, listen, can I show you how God really feels about this? Because I think we think, well, okay, what's the big deal, Pastor? I mean, what's the big deal if I, okay, you know, we're all friends. You know, I mean, I don't really mean anything by it. What's the big deal if I share this with somebody? Well, here's how God looks at it. Look at Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 12. Now, by the way, when God uses the word naughty here, it's not the way Santa uses it. Okay? It means ungodly. It means filthy, vile. A naughty person, a wicked man, walks with a froward mouth. Froward mouth means like it, you can't control it. You just, out it comes. Okay? And now he goes on, this same chapter, verse 16. So, and there's a, we won't read all of this, but there's, it says, these six things does the Lord what?
Hate.
Hate. Now, we think of the word hate as something that, well, we're not supposed to hate. My mom used to say that all the time. You're not allowed to hate anybody. Well, too late. Sorry, Mom, it's too late. What am I going to do? We think of the word hate as something negative. This is where God says, look, I hate these things. But then he goes a step, then he takes it another level. Yea, seven, or in other words, the number seven, the seventh thing in the list, is an abomination to him. In other words, that's the strongest word there is in Scripture for God's feeling negatively about something. Okay, it doesn't get any stronger than abomination. So if, you know, whatever word you can think of in your vocabulary, this is where God says, this last thing that I'm going to give you six things I hate, but the last one is the thing that I absolutely cannot tolerate. I despise it. It is so noxious to me. I can't stand it. So what do you think that seventh thing is that he's talking about? We skip to verse number 19 and we find it. A false witness that speaketh lies, and he that sows discord among... Wow. Now, here's what I want you to notice. We're not going to read all the verses. The first six things, they're all things. The first six, a lying tongue, you know, he sheds, you know, shedding innocent blood, they're all things. This one's a person. I'm sort of letting that hang there for a minute. God said, this one's a person, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. Now, obviously, there's a connotation there of within a family. But boy, that happens in families a lot, doesn't it?
Yes.
There is nothing quite so sad, nothing quite so just absolutely crushing to my spirit than to deal with a family when someone dies and there's fighting among the family. And it's almost always over money. It is the most tragic. Doug, I'm so... It was just so wonderful to spend time with your family because there's none of that. None of that. Beverly, your family, there's none of that. It's a wonderful treat when there's not these factions within families. But do we also not, can we also not apply this directly to the church? Yes? I mean, we're brethren, yes? So anybody who comes to you to try to divide people within the church, this is how God feels about that. All right, we've got to move on. I wanted you to see how serious God is about this. God is very, very serious when it comes to how we speak and how we are a witness and how we do that. So, number one, only eyewitnesses should be heard. In other words, don't listen to somebody that is... By the way, do you know what the legal word is for if in our legal system? If somebody was wanting to give secondhand information, does anybody know what it's called?
Hearsay.
Hearsay. You know that's only one letter off from heresy. So put that together. I know that's totally, you know, random, but still. It holds no weight in our courtrooms. Well, doggone it, why does it hold weight in families? You know, if an ungodly judge won't let somebody come in and say, well, so-and-so said, and so-and-so, I heard this from so-and-so. If an ungodly judge won't tolerate that in a courtroom, why do we tolerate that in our families? Amen. Why would we tolerate that in the church? Right? We don't want to do that. We don't want to tolerate that kind of stuff. So only an eyewitness should be even heard. Number two, one witness is not enough to receive an accusation. One witness is not enough to receive an accusation. Now, what does that mean? What is the word? Well, let's look at the scripture first. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 15. God's pretty clear about it. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin or for any sin that he sinneth. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So, the word established there means strengthened. I should have told you that earlier. I don't know if we used that before. Strengthened. It means to be strengthened. In other words, one witness is not enough to even consider something. Come on, be honest. Now think about it. Have you ever had somebody falsely accuse you of something? All the time?
Many times.
Many times? You know, think about it. God is saying, look, this happens all the time. Everybody experiences this. It is not okay for one person to be able to accuse somebody to you. So if one person comes to you and says, this is what I heard, this is what I saw, according to God, that's not enough to do anything about it. You follow me? That's not enough to take action on. Now, if there are two, and so the point here is they're saying if there's two or three, then you can begin something. But we'll get to that in the next point. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 19. It's the same principle, same word. Against an elder, receive not an accusation. Don't receive it. Don't even receive it. Now, this is talking about in the church, but I think it also applies to, it could apply to leadership of any kind. Hey, against a father, receive not an accusation. Kids, they looked at me. Wow, these kids. Wow. They don't even look at me when I talk to them. Yeah, it says don't receive against a parent. Don't receive an accusation against a boss. Hey, workers, when workers want to get together and talk, is the water cooler even a thing anymore? Is there actually a water cooler anymore in any places? But you get the idea, right? It says don't even receive an accusation. You know, if a bus driver comes in and wants to talk about the, are you the foreman? Are you the supervisor? Are you important at all? Dispatcher. if a bus driver comes in and says, oh, Sherry, you know what? My boss is this, and this. What are you supposed to do? According to this, you don't even receive the accusation. So we got to know what that means. What does that mean to not even receive it? You know, to receive it just simply means that we're not supposed to. What's that?
Listen.
Yeah, you're really not even supposed to listen. Not supposed to consider it as any value. In other words, it doesn't matter what it is, I don't believe it. Now, does that mean you ignore it? No. Hey, if a child comes and says, hey, this teacher did this or this, should you take that seriously? Of course. That's not the point, though. But what we don't do is assume someone's guilty. And we don't start looking to recruit other witnesses and things like that. This is one person making an accusation. Look, I know that some of the things that I'm going to teach tonight, there will be people that don't agree with it. I've had so many experiences in church about that. People you need to do something about this. Nope. No, I don't. I'm not acting on something just because you said somebody did something. That's not just. It's amazing to me how many people in the years that I've been a pastor that have come and gotten upset because I didn't do something about someone who did or said something about them or what have you, and then a couple of years later come to find out they're the ones now being accused of something. And I often will say, do you remember how mad you were at me? You remember how angry you were with me and how you left the church for a while because I didn't do something about that accusation that you made? Well, this is why. And aren't you glad now that I'm going to stand with you? And so forth. So you get the idea here. So it's very clear. Do not even receive an accusation. Now, what does it mean to receive that? Well, let me. It's the same kind of word that is the principle upon which our Supreme Court is founded. Our Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, always, if they're going to, in any case that they actually end up hearing, they always have to make two decisions. You always have to make two decisions. Does anybody know what the first decision is?
To hear the case.
You know, most cases never get heard by the Supreme Court. There's hundreds and hundreds that are filed. Hundreds of people try to, you know, take something all the way to the Supreme Court. They only hear a few cases. How do they determine which ones they're going to hear? Anybody know? There has to be a certain measure of, first of all, it's got to be important, but there's some standards. Before they even will listen to a case, they first have to decide whether or not they're going to hear it. Now, this is what God is trying to tell us. So what God is trying to tell us is, if I come to Sherry and I want to tell her, hey, you got to know what Tom said about, what Sue said. Who was it? Which one of you were talking about her? Was it you? Okay. So I got to tell you what Sue was saying. How should she respond? Come on, biblically speaking, how should she respond? Say it loud, Harold. I don't want to hear it. Or, you know, let's go together and talk to her. But not, oh, really? What did she say? Tell me what she said. Boy, I'm going to get her. You know, you see, because I am one witness. Listen, I am one witness, and I'm not even an eyewitness. But even if I'm an eyewitness, I'm only one witness. You say, well, come on, that's unrealistic. Is God unrealistic? Is God unrealistic? Does God's rule apply? Is that what God said? Did God say that by one witness you don't receive the accusation? That's what he said. So God tells us to do likewise. There has to be more than one eyewitness to receive or hear an accusation. Now God gives us some things that we can do about that. Okay, look, let's bring a little modern history. Oh, I've got to hurry here. So a couple of years ago, we all became, well, not everybody necessarily, but many, many, I think, of God's people became very, very angry at the way a Supreme Court justice nominee was treated. Right? He was, okay, 80% of the media and 50% of the country declared him guilty of being inappropriate with some woman. Right? What was his name? I forgot his name. Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Kavanaugh. Yeah. All right. So look, we all looked at that and we said, man, that is so unfair. Because what was in play? What was in play? One witness 25 years ago.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So from a biblical standpoint, now look, could he have been guilty? Absolutely could have been guilty. Could he have been innocent? Absolutely could have been innocent. Guess what? We'll never know. We'll never know, right? Because she said he did, he said he didn't, and there's one witness. So what is so biblically speaking, what should have happened when that accusation came out? Nothing should have happened, right? Nothing should have happened. Well, they should have gone and asked him. They should have gone and asked him. You know, somebody should have gone and said, hey, did you do this? You know, but as far as a full-blown investigation, no, you don't make an investigation on one witness, biblically speaking. Does everybody follow me on this?
Yes.
I'm not talking about did it happen, and I know there's exceptions and there could be other evidence, but in this case, that's what it was. So here's the reason I brought that up. We get furious when that happens to a Supreme Court justice. So why do we tolerate it in our own lives? Why do we let people talk in our ears about other people? Man, I feel like I am all alone in here. Good luck in a couple of weeks, buddy. Listen, God hates this, folks. He hates it. It's more than hate. He super hates it. It's an abomination to him. He says one witness is not enough. It's got to be an eyewitness, and one witness is not enough. So, you know, we tolerate this so many times in our lives. Just give you an example. I got a phone call Monday night, as a matter of fact, after I left your mom's house. I had a phone call on my way home, And there was a somebody that I love and I respect and I believe has absolutely the best motives, somebody who cares deeply about people, cares deeply even about the person that they were passing along an accusation about. They said, "Pastor, I'm concerned about this, and I'm concerned because this person is doing this and said this and said this." And I said, "Wait, time out. I'm on the phone in my car." I said, "Time out. Did she say it to you?" Well, no. I said, "Well, please understand, there's nothing that I can do about this." Now, look, I believe this person, and please, again, understand, this is somebody who deeply, deeply cares and wants the right thing to be done and wants to help the people. Even the person that's being accused loves that person and wants to help that person. I said, "Well, don't you think we ought to do something about it?" "No, I don't. We can't do anything about it. Number one, if the person who is the eyewitness is not willing to come out and talk about it and do it themselves, then there's nothing that we can do and still be just before God." You follow me? And this is tough, but this is where we live, right? And it's an important situation. But we've got to be just above all things. We talked about that, you know, and so forth. So you get the idea. All right. Let's move on. All right, so here's, and by the way, here's the point, I think I gave you a statement about this. We can't get so caught up in the mission, we can't get so caught up with right motives that we forget about God's methods. No matter how important the issue seems to be, we've got to find a way to do things God's way. And God says only eyewitnesses should be heard, one witness isn't enough. Number three, two witnesses are not proof. Two witnesses are not proof. There's a difference between proof and evidence. We all get that, right? There's a difference between proof and evidence. Evidence is easy to come up with. Proof, not so much. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse number 1. Notice, Paul writing, "This is the third time I am coming to you. In the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established." This is a repeat that he is actually quoting the Old Testament scriptures that we've already looked at. Again, the word "establish" means strengthen. So what Paul is saying is, look, only if there are two or three witnesses can we even begin to consider this. If two people come and say, "Hey, Pastor, this is what happened," or "This is kind of wrong that's going on," then it's, or comes to your, or if you're an employer and two of your employees come, you don't just automatically believe it. All right, Billy, if you know, well, your brother and your sister-in-law are the only employees, aren't they? Oh, you got a couple, your nephew, yeah. So Tony and Ty, I don't know if they're listening or not. They decide to gang up and they want to get Bo fired. So they go to Billy and they say, "Oh, Billy, you know, Bo," and by the way, Bo's their kid. He's their son. So there's all kinds of reasons for that. But listen, you know, he doesn't just automatically believe them. He can't just say, "Okay, well, let's just get rid of Bo." No, he's got to say, "Okay, since there are two people talking about this, two people say, this is what I saw," now he can consider it. Now he can go in, maybe even investigate it, that sort of thing. That's the point that's trying to be made here. So God is telling the church that we need to be different from the world. So how did Jesus advise us to act in this bit? Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 18. Again, I know that it's hard to make this practical. These are principles, it's hard to make practical. So here's what Jesus said. He said, "Okay, here's the deal. If your brother," that's a Christian brother, the way we would take that, or it could be a family brother, "shall trespass against you, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone." Time out. So what is step one? What is step one in justice? Yeah, so I come to Sherry and I say, "Sherry, I got to tell you what Sue said about you." And she, you know what she needs to say to me? "Yeah, I don't want to hear it." One person, so she's done that. But now she can go to Sue and say, "Hey, you got a problem with me?
Yes.
You want a piece of me? You want some of this? Come on." Between the two of them. And if there's no satisfaction, and God says, you know, you may not get that. He said, "But listen, if you can work it out," you say, "Oh, no, you know, I said something like this. Oh, that person misunderstood you." And everything's good, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way Christians ought to take care of things.
Yeah.
You know, Sherry shouldn't go around the church saying, hey, I heard that Sue said this about me. Don't you ever hear Sue say anything bad about me? You know, we don't go looking for witnesses. We don't go looking for witnesses or go looking for evidence. Go right to her. Now, if she won't hear her, continue on, verse 16. But if Sue is unreasonable, if she will not hear you, then take with you one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. So here's what Jesus said. Jesus said, go and get two godly people and bring them with you, and the four of you sit down and let them hear the case. Let them hear what happened. They can sort of weigh in and help them to say, and by the way, now there are two or three witnesses later on if there's an issue. I often say I don't like to do couples counseling, for example. I don't do individual counseling with couples usually. I say, nope, you either both come or don't come at all. Why? Because oftentimes, how many times have you ever said something to somebody and then they went out and they repeated what you said but didn't really repeat what you said, they repeated what they heard?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Jesus is saying, this is why you need to have these two or three godly people with you, because then as it's being talked about and you're relaying the story later on, well, this was unfair. It's like, wait, Sherry, that's not exactly what she said. You know, we were there and I remember what she actually said was, you know, thus and so. So Jesus is getting really practical here. But if we try somebody before we ever follow these procedures, then people get hurt. People get hurt, and we become the guilty ones because we were unjust in the way we went about it. Do you know we could actually end up being in the right later on? It could actually end up being true, but we would still be guilty of being unjust, even if the person was guilty, if we didn't follow God's procedures. So here's the thing, and I'm going to close with this. You see what that does? Do you see what Jesus set up there? Jesus set up a situation where there has to be honesty. Because if there's two other people there listening to your case, then later on you can't say to somebody else, oh, well, this is what was said at that meeting. No, we were there. There's accountability. There's honesty and accountability. Now watch. How would it change our world if there was accountability for the people who make accusations? Can I show you what God had to say about that? Number four, only witnesses willing to be accountable should be heard. Only witnesses willing to be accountable should be heard. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 18. We're going to wrap this up, but this is really important, probably the most important thing of all night. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition. Wait, when? After there has been at least two eyewitnesses, right? Qualified witnesses. By the way, why does God care so much about that? You know, there have been several times in Scripture where there were false witnesses that came against people. One of them got put on a cross, right? Okay. The judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness, in other words, if somebody's lying and he's testified falsely against his brother, what should happen to him? Then shall you do unto him as he had thought to have done unto the one he accused. Now listen, how would that change our world if we followed biblical principles? How would the news media survive? Think about it. They couldn't just say whatever they want to say about somebody. Look, and I don't care which side of the fence they're on. I don't care which side of the aisle they're on. The news media is corrupt. It's corrupt. Big tech is corrupt. I'm probably going to get a warning for that. Look, seriously. If there was accountability, if the same things that happened to them when they're found to be false, look, when was the last time you know what they do? We print a retraction. How about you cough up some money? How about you get shut down for a couple of weeks? How about, you know, these kind of things. If the same things would happen to the accusers in our world on a national level, if the penalty that they were seeking for that person they accused falsely would happen to them, buddy, that'd put a stop to a lot of that, wouldn't it? That put a stop to a lot of name-calling across the aisle in Congress. Think about elections. That changed the whole landscape of elections. There wouldn't be so loose with the lips about their opponents, right? Now, we see it there. So the question then I think we all ought to wrestle with is, so how would it affect my life, though? What if I was held accountable? What if I was held accountable for everything that I said about someone to someone?